It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical.
Let's do it.
Before we begin, of course, we have to cover a few things. First of all, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
Well, first of all, I'm the ex-Christian and you're the non-believing sort of Jew.
Second of all, this is not a Bible study podcast.
And second of all, usually I'm reading the NIV and you're reading the NRSV.
Mm-hmm.
Third of all, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
That's right. Fourth of all, as always, our podcast may contain material that is not appropriate for children.
Yeah, this one definitely has some raping in it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you just throw it. If you throw it there in the warning, it's kind of like you said it with no warning at all, isn't it?
Well, I guess. But I mean, yeah, just put a condom over your brain before mm-hmm. you listen to this podcast.
Wrap it up before you tap it up.
And is there anything else we need to cover?
No.
Well, it's a new year. And I thought for the new year, why don't we just go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And do it all over again.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with Genesis.
Okay.
Or should I say Leptogenesis, a.k.a. Lesser Genesis, a.k.a. the Book of Jubilees.
Mm-hmm. The happiest book in the Bible.
Sort of. So, the Book of Jubilees.
I think there are at least two things wrong with that.
Is a different version of the Book of Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the first part of Exodus. And it is canonical only in Ethiopian Christian / Jewish denominations. Everyone else considers it not just apocryphal, but pseudepigraphal.
Mm-hmm. Which means it's
fake writing.
Well, yeah, it's like true writing, but it's not real.
And for a long time, the only version that we had was in Ge'ez, mm-hmm. which is this like ancient Ethiopian language that they use in some like Ethiopian Orthodox services, you know, the same way you could use Latin in a Catholic mass or Hebrew in a Jewish service, even if that's not the language you normally speak. But then when we found the Dead Sea Scrolls, there were...
When we found the Dead Sea Scrolls.
When this podcast broke the incredible story of mm-hmm. the Dead Sea Scrolls.
I remember it well. 1957.
Time of change.
In America, yeah.
In America. No, so when some archaeologists whose names I don't know found the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Great work, by the way.
They found Hebrew fragments of it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, a lot of early Christians referred to the Book of Jubilees in their writings. So it's not like this was like made up somewhere like way down the line. Like it is old.
It real old. It famous.
Uh-huh. But most of the versions were lost except in Ethiopia. And actually, Wikipedia points out that even where the plot points are like exactly the same as in Genesis,
mm-hmm.
the wording is different. So it is like a different source.
I see.
Maybe from like a different region or just like a slightly different tradition.
Got it.
That I guess was kind of part of a more mainstream canon for a while and then somehow got pushed out and ended up in Ethiopia.
I read that in the Dead Sea Scrolls, among all of these scrolls mm-hmm. that they found in this Dead Sea.
Mm-hmm. When they were scrolling through the scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
Scrolling in the deep,
they found many copies of this book, more than any other book that is currently in the canon.
Oh, really?
They did. So it was an important book to the people of the community.
Qumran region or whatever, yeah.
And they found a bunch of copies in various other forms. And like you were saying, there was no extant copies of the book before that, mm-hmm. except in Ge'ez. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they compared the Hebrew that they found in the Dead Sea Scrolls to the Ge'ez versions. And they deemed the Ge'ez to be a pretty faithful translation.
Yeah.
So it's like legit.
Yeah. So it is like very old. And I don't even know if it's pre-exilic or post-exilic.
But, I don't know either.
But it's certainly not just like some crazy made up thing that like people put together like way after the fact.
Yeah.
It is like genuinely.
I mean, that would be cool too. No shame. No shame if you believe in something that somebody just made up like 100 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I believe in a thing called love.
And I'm a Mormon.
That song just came out like 2005 or something.
I feel like you stepped on my punchline, but that's okay.
I think you stepped on my punchline.
It's all right.
In my punchline.
This is what long-term relationships are about.
Stepping on each other's punchlines.
Yeah.
Continuously.
Mm-hmm.
So you may remember from the book of Leviticus, but hopefully you don't, because Jesus Christ. A Jubilee year was like this special year in the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have like a week of years, which is 7 years. And then when you had seven of those year weeks,
mm-hmm.
then like the 49th or 50th year would be a Jubilee year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically like the super mega ultra Sabbath where you had to do all this special stuff. You had to like let your fields lie fallow and like free your Israelite slaves, but not like your non-Israelite
not
slaves.
Your foreign slaves.
Let's not go crazy.
You forgive all debts to Jews.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And throughout this book, it's really interesting. It measures everything in Jubilees.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, like so-and-so lived to be 3 Jubilees, 1 week of years, and 3 more years old. Or it'll say like in the 20th Jubilee of time,
mm-hmm.
like since time started, you know, this happened.
You know, and in the great accounting that this book puts forward, it has all these Jubilees that add up to like 2,400 years or whatever, mm-hmm. but they leave a special gap in there for the 40 years in the desert.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's like Jubilees before that and Jubilees after
that. But that makes sense because like we start to get into chapter 1.
Okay.
We start the story with Moses going up on Mount Sinai
mm-hmm.
to like receive the 10 commandments from God. And that's just before the 40 years starts.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. One quick note, actually, before we get into everything, I do want to say, so a lot of this stuff is repeated material from Genesis.
Right.
As we've talked about. So, we are going to kind of skim over stuff that's the same. We're not going to get into every single detail.
That's not us saying that your favorite story from Genesis is not super important and great.
Yeah, like
and
if you're really into like Tamar tricking Judah, like I get it. That's a great story, but it's exactly the same in Genesis and in Jubilees, so we're not really going to talk about it.
Right. It is a great story, though.
I know. I love it. So, yeah. Okay. So we start with Moses. He's up on Mount Sinai.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a little thing that they call in literature in media res.
Is that what they call it?
According to me, yes.
All right. In media resurrection.
In media. That sounds like an anime name.
Yeah.
In media colon resurrection.
Yeah. And instead of God talking directly to Moses, he has like an angel acting as an in medium res. Eh?
Well, yeah, that's standard because the voice of God would kill a
person.
Right,
right. So this is called the angel of the presence.
Mm-hmm.
And the angel is the one like narrating the book.
Mm.
So the whole time, I mean, it's often easy to forget that because things are in the third person. But then the angel will sometimes be like, oh, and then I did this.
Right.
Or say to Moses like, oh, and then you did this. But most of the time it's just kind of like in third person.
I like the way God tells the angel to tell the story to Moses. Sounds like he's telling his secretary to do it.
Yeah, totally.
He says, and he said to the angel of the presence, write for Moses from the beginning of creation till my sanctuary has been built among them for all eternity.
Totally. Like, look up files A through F.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is, it's kind of interesting because, you know, the Jewish like tradition is that Moses wrote the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
But like when you read the actual Torah, that's like, it's like that doesn't
seems
make sense
improbable
for Moses to
sure
have written it.
Yeah.
But this kind of like makes that plausible.
It glues it all together. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
With like this little framing device. It's like so meta. It's like so postmodern. So he starts off by telling Moses the creation story.
Yes.
I'm assuming the angel is a he because like the Bible is chauvinistic. But it doesn't actually
specify. I don't think angels have gender, but.
Well, then why is like Michael a he and Gabriel's a he?
They're mannish.
Satan is a he. They're mannish. Mannish boys.
Yeah, like Manischewitz.
So the creation story, more or less the same, except that there are a shit ton of angels.
Yeah, there's angels all over
so
this
thing.
So
it's like on the first day, God creates heaven, earth, water, and like a jillion angels.
And all of the spirits which serve before him, yeah. The angels of the presence, angels of sanctification, angels of the spirit of fire, and the angels of the spirit of the winds, and the angels of the spirit of the clouds, and of darkness, and of snow, and of hail, and of
hoar. And it goes on and on and on.
And angels of the voices, and the thunder, and of the lightning, spirits of cold and heat, winter and spring, autumn and summer.
Angels of Tupperware, the angels of tampons, angels of small liberal arts colleges in the Midwest.
Abysses and the darkness.
Oh, that too.
Eventide and the light, dawn and day.
Okay. Yeah, so all the important ones. And then, like, we move on to the Adam and Eve story, which is also basically the same.
They weave some nice law stuff into each story.
Yeah, that's true too.
The way some of these stories are told in this version in Genesis, some of the stories are very narrative.
Yeah.
In this one, it's more like it retells them, and sometimes it'll add on a little addendum that's like, and that's why they say women are unclean.
That's why you have to follow this law.
Right.
A great example is the Adam and Eve story, because in this version, they're not created in the Garden of Eden. They're created in a separate land called Elda.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adam is moved into the Garden of Eden after 40 days, and Eve is moved in after 80 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, and so that's why a woman is unclean for 40 days after giving birth to a boy baby.
Right.
And unclean for 80 days after giving birth to a female baby. And it's like, oh, of course.
Because they...
All of that all makes sense right now. Mm-hmm. I had some questions before, but they've all been answered. Also, in this version, Eve doesn't actually get a name until they get kicked out.
That's right. And they also are speaking Hebrew.
Yes, they're speaking Hebrew. And then once they're out, they have Cain and Abel.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a daughter named Awan.
Yeah. So in your copy, were the names all weird? Like of the ladies, especially?
With like a lot of diacritical marks?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we read the same copy just on different sites.
Okay.
There aren't that many copies available, like, in English.
I'm sure.
Where did you read yours?
Sacred-texts.com.
And what did the header image of sacred-texts.com look like?
It was an advertisement for their Sacred Texts DVD set that contains over 1,400 sacred texts, according to the text.
Did you buy it?
No, it was $120, baby.
Could it's be like a good investment for the podcast.
I'm a man who likes wisdom.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to pay that much money for a DVD copy of wisdom. I like my wisdom
straight from the source.
Yes, you get
an angel of the presence down here, I'll pay $120.
Sure.
A DVD?
Well, I mean, for that you'd be lucky to pay $120. But if it's going to be, I want my wisdom bound in a book, okay? I consider me old-fashioned, but I don't want to buy it on a DVD. I want to read it for free online, possibly on my phone, on the train.
That is what I also did, except I did, it was like pseudepigrapha.net or whatever.
Sure. Your number one spot for all
It had the least amount
writing.
Of like insane fonts and like weird backgrounds and like my cursor turning into like a skull and crossbones or whatever.
Or like a blinking eye.
Yeah.
Because you're like opening your third eye.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, isn't this interesting how this is just like the Bhagavad Vita?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, do you want to read the reconstructed Vedas?
No.
No.
So anyway, they have Cain and Abel, Adam and Eve, and they have a daughter who is definitely not mentioned in regular Genesis.
Mm.
And then Cain kills Abel.
That story is still fucked up to me.
It's interesting, like in Genesis, it's a whole scene where like God comes down and he's like, hey, Cain, what's going on? Where's Abel? But here it's just like, oh, Cain killed Abel. Adam and Eve were in mourning for 32 years. And then they had a third son, Seth, and another daughter named Azura. And then Cain marries his sister, Awan.
Right.
And Seth marries the other sister, Azura.
Right.
And they each have a son. They have sons called Enoch and Enos. That is definitely not in Genesis.
Yeah, that part gets elided a little
bit. Yeah, so then there's a couple generations of incest. And then we get a different Enoch, who is the one that we did a previous episode on. That was the other Ethiopian apocryphon.
He's like the star of the show in Ethiopia.
That we did. Yeah, I mean, he's a big deal.
And this book bigs him up to a ridiculous degree.
It does big up him.
Mm-hmm. They're like Adam. Him up real big. So this book lays out that the intended lifespan of a human being is 1,000 years.
Yeah. But it's measured in jubilees also. So it's like.
It's kind of confusing.
It's like it's 20 jubilees.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give or take.
Yeah.
But if you sin or you anger God in some way, you get years deducted.
Yeah.
So like Adam only lives 970 years.
Yeah, because of the whole fall from grace.
Because the fall from grace. He's got a minor deduction there, but otherwise he was nearly perfect. Only person who lived a full 1,000 was Enoch.
Because
he was perfect.
Mm.
He was the only person that was perfect.
Mm.
Even Abraham did not live the full 1,000.
No, Abraham only lived like 200.
I think like 250 or something like that, which is basically shit.
Yeah, I mean, all things considered. And it does say it's like, it was because of all the sin.
I just like that we're getting some metrics here.
It is nice.
Measurable stuff.
It is nice. So we get Enoch, and then we get Methuselah, and then Lamech, and then Noah.
I think in the original Genesis, didn't Methuselah live over 1,000 years?
I can't remember. He certainly lives like 900 something.
Okay, at least, yeah.
And what's special about all these men in comparison to the ones that came before is that they they don't marry their sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They marry their cousins.
Mm-hmm. That's
like
what I'm talking about.
Civilized people.
That's right.
Big step in human history, marrying cousins instead of siblings. Adam dies of old age at this point, and Cain also dies.
Or was it foul play?
Or was it? Cain dies of his house collapsing on him.
Yes.
Because he killed Abel with a stone, mm-hmm. and so therefore his stone house collapses.
And the saying is, if you go out and commit trouble, trouble comes and finds you.
I think the saying is, people who live in stone houses shouldn't throw stones.
That's right. People who live in brother houses shouldn't stone glass.
Yeah. There you have it. Truer words have never been spoken. And so then at this point, this is when all the wicked fuck angels come down.
Oh, yeah. It's so I can't believe that this got cut from mainline Genesis.
the stuff about all the.
The watchers?
The watchers.
Yeah. It fills in a huge gap.
Fornicating with human women and.
Because in original Genesis.
Teaching them about makeup.
Yeah. In normal Genesis. It goes from Adam and Eve,
mm-hmm.
and then their first generation, mm-hmm. and that spreads a little bit. But then the next step is like Noah, and the world is so evil that God has to destroy everything. And you're like, well, what the fuck happened? It was like five generations. How did it spiral so badly out of control?
That's true.
And the only answer is evil fuck angels.
Yeah, that's, you know what? When you put it that way, it's hard to see it any other way.
Because like seeing this, you're like, well, yeah. I mean, like if you're angels are down there and you sent them down there to like teach people good things like reading and writing, although
no, they're not supposed to know reading and writing.
Okay, well, they're supposed to whatever good knowledge they were supposed to have. I'm a little unclear. It seems like everything pretty much is evil.
I'm unclear about it.
Till fields and I don't know. Anyway, but then the angels go rogue. God's got to get a handle on that.
Mm-hmm. And then the way to do is with a flood.
Yep.
And so he does the flood. Noah's in the ark. It's the same deal as in Genesis. Although,
did you just call it Gemesis?
No, that's my cover band for Gem and the Holograms.
I was going to say it's the name of your homemade jewelry Etsy store.
Oh, that's a good one too. Actually, it's my To Kill a Mockingbird fanfic.
That okay,
explains the backstory of Gem.
Okay, that's really good.
I'm glad you were impressed. a weird difference in this one is that the boat doesn't land on top of Mount Ararat. It lands on top of Mount Lubar, which is in a region or perhaps a mountain range called Ararat. And then same deal where he has three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth.
Before we go too far, I just want to jump back to one thing.
Oh, yeah.
This one points out that if you remember from the Book of Enoch, and you probably don't, but Enoch goes on this magical adventure where the angels take him all around the holy plains and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he learns about mysteries and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back. In this one, it says that he was gone for 6 years.
Oh.
I think that's the kind of detail I like. Because, like, if his holy journey took 6 years of real time, you know?
Yeah.
I just wonder, was it like just a day for Enoch? Or was it, you know, I don't know.
I mean, if it's what happened in the book, it only seemed like a day.
Right. So it's, I like to think.
It only seemed like a few hours, actually.
Yeah, but that amount of wisdom compressed, you know, took 6 years off his life. What a shame.
That's cool. I didn't notice that. That is cool. So back to Noah. He's got the three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. Ham sees his dad's dick when he passes out drunk, and therefore he gets cursed.
This story also, I read it again, and I'm still like,
I know, it's like, what, they didn't fix this one? Like,
yeah. At least pop an angel in here or something. Make it make sense.
And so then, like, more so than in the regular Book of Genesis, we get, like, the division of the three, like, lineages from Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And I think that's more, like, implied in Genesis. It's just kind of, like, mentioned. And here they really go into detail about who gets what land. And so, like, basically, Japheth gets the north, Shem gets the middle, and Ham gets the south. And in Western Christian tradition, at least, Japheth gets Europe, Shem gets the Middle East, and Ham gets Africa because he's cursed. And Western Christianity is
racist.
That's
fucked up.
Yeah. But so I was confused to see that that's true here too, even though this is like an Ethiopian. I mean, I guess it didn't originate in Ethiopia, but like,
the writer of this was probably based in modern Palestine.
Right, right. So, yeah, but that kind of sucks that, like, Africa is still, like, the cursed one, even in, like, a text that only continues, like, it's only extant in Africa. And especially because, like, one of Ham's sons is Cush, which is the Hebrew word for Ethiopia. And, like, so that's, like, this is the origin story for Ethiopia as a country, or, like, not as a country, but as a region in the Bible, and it's like based on a curse, and it sucks that that's in like the Ethiopian Bible.
I agree. I mean, I can't really deal with that. When they divided up the world in three parts, it struck me because I was like, oh yeah, Noah and his kids are the only people left. So I just imagine them landing on the top of a mountain and then being like, okay, well, this third of the compass is yours.
Yeah.
This third of the compass is yours, and this third of the compass is yours.
It also like, it went into great detail about like which rivers bordered, like exactly like
and,
the
and
dimensions like, of their land. And it mentioned the Garden of Eden several times.
It did.
It was like, oh, like, this, your half goes up to like the Garden of Eden
and
on the south.
And you're very lucky because your part includes the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
Which I guess, like, is in Iraq somewhere.
I guess.
Yeah. Which is funny that there's just a place that's the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
I like that. It's like, oh, well, we all know where it is. We don't go back, I guess, because we got kicked out.
Well, in Genesis, it's guarded with a flaming sword.
Oh, what? Really?
Yeah.
That's dope. Who wields the flaming sword?
It wields itself.
It wields itself?
Yeah. We read this. You read this.
I read it. It was our first episode.
It was our first
episode. What did I know from Bible back then?
You didn't know. You were a Bibble baby.
I was a little Bibble boy.
A tiny, tiny Bibble boy. So then they're like repopulating the earth or whatever.
However that works.
Yeah, it does. I mean, they don't go into the incest explanation.
They brought their wives on the boat.
Yeah, so they've got some sons, whatever. But these grandsons of Noah start sinning because of quote unquote unclean demons.
Yes. Oh, before we go any further, I want to point out no mention of any animals on the boat this time.
Oh, there was a very brief mention when they land.
Well, they brought this time was all the animals that were good for sacrifice.
Oh, yeah.
That's all they brought.
It definitely was cut down.
So this time it's just like they didn't bring animals so that they could like reseed all the animal population in the world. They brought animals so that they could give like a proper A+
sacrifice. And that is the first thing they do when they get off the ark in both Genesis and Jubilees. Although I liked in Jubilees it said that God like smelled the goodly savor.
Got that sweet lamb
when
smell.
When you read like Sumerian or like Babylonian text or whatever.
Which I do occasionally.
It's always talking about how the gods like smell this delicious offering.
Oh,
and
really?
That
reminds me of like a hobo from like a 20s cartoon, like smelling the pie,
yes,
cooling on the windowsill, and then the smell like picks him up and his twinkle toes like...
Yeah, exactly.
Just like the smell carries him over to the pie.
And it's like such a like human, or not even human, it's like an animal...
Yeah,
it's instinct. Like, it's like you smell something really good and you love it.
It's
and
identifiable.
It's like, why is that what a god would do?
Yeah.
You know, like a god shouldn't have a nose. Yep. Anyway,
why couldn't a god smell everything at once?
Maybe that's his problem.
Is there a pie so tasty that even Jesus would not think it smelled good?
That question has haunted me for many years. And I think it will continue to do so.
Unless you purchase a DVD set of the world's religious and...
sacred.text/org. Okay, so Noah's grandsons are out there sinning, unclean demons, and Noah prays to God to get rid of the demons. But, there's an angel named Mastema.
Is it an angel? It's not an angel.
It's like... an accusing angel.
It's described as the prince of spirits.
The prince of spirits. So some supernatural being. But he's not a demon.
He's not a demon.
And he fulfills basically the same role as like the early concept of Satan as the accusing angel.
Right.
Like in the book of Job, where it's like he kind of like reports to God.
Yeah. He fulfills like... God doled out all of these roles onto these angels.
Yeah.
And he needed one to just be a shit stirrer.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need you to just like keep everybody on their toes.
Yeah.
That's your job. That's Mastema.
Yeah. So Mastema asks to keep 10% of the demons alive so that he can use them to test people's faith and stuff.
Well, yeah. So Noah complains to God and says that his grandsons are being tortured by demons.
Yeah.
That they're causing them pain and causing them to like act out.
And God's like, okay, I'll get rid of the demons. But Mastema's like, no, we need to keep some of them.
He's like, some of my guys have gotten out of control. But let's just cut it down to the bare minimum.
Let's just do a skeleton crew.
Yeah. So they fires 90% of the demons.
I don't get...
I don't get it either.
Why does God get on board with this?
Why is God involved in this at all? Noah was having a conversation with God about... Did God make these staffing decisions? If so, how can Noah question them?
Yeah. And
it's like there are as many demons as God wants there to be, Noah.
Also, if God is making the staffing decisions, like Mastema seems to be like he's causing problems for all the other employees, you know?
Like his department has gotten out of control.
Yeah.
Like obviously they're way over their budget if they can cut down to like 10% and still function.
Yeah.
And Mastema must know it too because he doesn't ask for it. He isn't like, I can't do my job unless you... leave me like half my guys.
Right.
He's like, God, just leave me like 1/10. I know I'm way out of bounds here.
And then God, like, to make up for leaving 10% of the demons, like, sends some angels to teach Noah about, like, medicine.
Yes, he does.
Which is something that the evil fuck angels did, and then they got in trouble for it. But this time it's okay. But then the next thing that happens is that Noah dies, so he doesn't even, like, pass on the information.
But it's for his grandsons.
Okay, but they
to help with the afflictions that were caused by these rampant demons.
Oh, the afflictions.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the afflictions.
Well, sometimes it is. But that's what's also very confusing is like the watchers are there not only to watch, but to give out bits of wisdom or bits of knowledge or something like that. Like they were supposed to know about astronomy, right? Or were they not supposed to know about that?
They're not supposed to.
Well, that was one of the first things that they taught
them. In fact,
them.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah. So and they weren't supposed to know. Maybe they are supposed to know about medicine now. Maybe it's God being like, okay, well, the sin buildup on earth has been...
All the sin has gotten to be too much.
We so gotta... like your lifespan is hilariously short now, and it's not what I intended, because you've polluted the atmosphere with so much sin. You know, you've diluted your own lifespan so much that I need to like balance that out. So I'll have the angels teach you a thing or two that will like... would. It's technically forbidden knowledge, but I was the one that forbade it, so it's cool now.
Yeah, I guess. This all just seems perfect. It seems perfect. I can't think of a better way to run a universe than this. Thanks, God. Two thumbs up. So Noah dies at age 950, or 19 jubilees and 2 weeks and 5 years. Mm-hmm. The weeks are weeks of years, 7 years each. And then Canaan is one of Ham's sons. Mm-hmm. So he's supposed to stay in Africa, but he claims some land farther north. And then that obviously becomes like the land of Canaan, mm-hmm. which is like the promised land. So I guess this is supposed to be like...
justification for the Jews taking Canaan back when they leave
Egypt.
Even
though there's people already living there, yeah. Okay, so with Noah gone, the problems just get worse. Because Noah was like super holy. And now there's just like... even more sin. The medicine doesn't really seem to be doing anything.
No.
To be honest.
Mm-mm.
I mean, the medicine was probably like, eat a fish gallbladder anyway or whatever. Like, squeeze a fish gallbladder in your eyes. And so people are like going to war. They're taking slaves. They're eating blood. You're not supposed to eat blood.
Right. And then it's brother on brother action as soon as Noah dies. And not in the sexy way.
I was like, wait, what? Mastema has them worshiping idols. Again, I don't know why God keeps this person around. It's like if you have one employee that's like
actively working against you,
or that's like that's just causing problems for the entire staff.
No, but this is innovative management processes, baby. Like you got one person whose job it is just to stir shit up, just to see the problems before they become problems.
Are you saying he's like a loose cannon, but he gets results?
Yes.
But what results does he get? Because it seems like the results are really bad. It seems like everybody's just dying.
Ah, but how would God know that he had to be more careful about, guiding these Israelites?
Because he's faith. God. He knows everything.
Well, he knew enough to empower Mastema to test their faith. The wisest man, he's the wisest boss delegates. Okay.
Okay. Mastema. So these dudes are running around sinning. Everything is terrible. Mm-hmm. And eventually some of them.
And that was 2016. Oh, we joke.
Hillary's emails. Some descendant of somebody found the city of Ur of the Chaldees.
Yeah.
And a few generations later, we get the birth of Abraham, except that he is born Abram. Are you ready to talk about Abram?
Totally.
Okay.
So it's a great story in the original Bible, but I think this version is like superior.
It is. It's amazing. You get like so much stuff about his backstory. So you get like all this stuff about his childhood. So he's raised worshiping idols.
Yes.
And he figures out at a young age that that's bad, but he can't really do anything about it yet. So when he's...
You know why? Because children in our society lack social capital.
It's ageist, frankly.
It is.
I mean, especially to Abram. So he's 14 years old, and Mastema's always sending ravens to ruin their crops.
Yeah, this is so cool.
And Abram goes and yells at the ravens, and then they go away.
He does it every day for 14 days.
He yells at them 70 times.
Oh, my bad. I knew it was something like that.
And then everyone is like, whoa, this kid is really good at yelling at ravens.
This kid is good. He's got it.
So he gets real famous, and also he teaches everyone how to plow fields, because that's like also something.
He's like a scientist priest. You know, he's so brilliant. What he does is he teaches them to put the seeds on the bottom of the plow,
uh-huh.
so that when they till the fields,
uh-huh.
it digs the seeds down in deep,
uh-huh.
automatically, so they don't need to sprinkle the seeds on top, so the ravens can't even get to the seeds. So first of all, he sends the ravens away.
Why did he figure this out? He was only 14.
Because he's a fucking genius, man.
He's a man of God.
Yeah. I mean,
and a champion bird yeller.
Although with that science involved, it makes me a little suspicious because every other place in the Bible
where there's science,
there's the watchers have been involved. Uh-huh. You know, like everything reeks of forbidden knowledge.
Uh-huh.
So like he's solving problems with science. And I'm like,
This does seem like a little fuck angel might have whispered in his ear.
Yeah. And imagine that scene.
I don't want to.
I don't want to either.
But now we have to. Thanks to you. And then so he grows up, he marries Sarai.
Mm-hmm.
His brothers also get married, and one of them has a son named Lot.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, very well respected shouter man.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to his dad, Terah, look, we gotta stop worshiping idols.
Yeah.
And Terah's like, yo, I know, but I don't want an angry mob to kill us.
Right.
So Abraham at the age of, 60, he's a young newlywed with his life ahead of him,
mm-hmm.
Burns down the house of idols.
Right.
And his brother tries to save the idols, but dies in the fire.
Yeah. That's such an incredible story.
I know. Like, I can't believe that's like not in Genesis. And that's so Lot has no dad now. And, So they all move to escape the angry mob. They move from Ur to Canaan.
Mm-hmm.
And then Abram goes out. He looks up at the stars to see his horoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, oh, wait, that's idolatry. Sorry, God. And God's like, no problem, man. And just don't worship idols.
Mm-hmm.
And then he teaches him Hebrew. So Abram and Sarai and Abram's nephew Lot,
mm-hmm.
all go traveling and a wandering. In Egypt, Pharaoh does steal Sarai and take her as his wife. However, Abram doesn't say that she's his sister.
That's right.
And then Pharaoh gives him back after some curses, whatever. Lot goes off to live in Sodom. And it notes that Abram is sad because he doesn't have a son and Lot doesn't have a father. So they were like father-son bros.
They were father-son bros.
Yeah. Again, like in Genesis, Sarai can't get pregnant. So she tells Abram to have a child with her handmaiden Hagar, and that's Ishmael. And then we've got the covenant with Abraham. With Abram, who then becomes Abraham. Sarai becomes Sarah.
Which is one of my favorite parts of this story in the Bible originally.
Mm-hmm.
Is the first covenant with Abraham, and it's told very beautifully here too. With less time wasting, I would say this version. Like there's just like two prayers.
Yeah, that's true.
He sings a song, and then like I think Sarai sings a little song or something like that,
and then everybody gets circumcised.
Yeah.
And then the next chapter is weird because the narration is like. Okay, so like God finally let Sarah get pregnant. Also Sodom and Gomorrah got destroyed and Lot had sex with his daughters and it was really fucked up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Sarah named the son Isaac. Like it's like just a parenthetical. You don't get any of this stuff. You don't get the pillar of salt. You don't get the offering the angels to the mob or anything.
Which is it's too bad because that's a good story too. But, you know, they were trying to stick to the main narrative.
Yeah. And so then they have Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where it really departs from Genesis, and it gets really, really interesting. When Isaac is weaned, they have like a weaning party.
Okay.
And Hagar and Ishmael, as part of the household, are there celebrating. And Sarah sees how much Abraham loves Ishmael, and so she gets jealous and banishes them.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting, like that they're at this party and they're celebrating Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't stand it. Mm. Like, they're there being happy for Isaac. So they get...
That is a much better scene.
Yeah.
In the regular Genesis version, it's more just like...
general concept
yes.
of...
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't have the literary immediacy of a weaning party.
Yeah. So then they get banished and they go out in the desert and it's the same as in Genesis where, like, they almost die, but mm-hmm. then an angel intervenes. And then we get the story of the binding of Isaac, which is very different.
Yes.
Because it's like Job.
Telling. Yeah.
It's like exactly like Job with Mastema playing the role of like the accusing Satan. And it's like, again, like God is bragging about his faithful servant, Abraham. And Mastema is like, well, sure, but would he still be so faithful if you tested him? And then God's like, well, look, I already kind of tested him a bunch. Like,
He's good.
There was the ravens,
yeah.
The idols. I made Pharaoh steal his wife. I had him cut off the skin of his penis, Mastema. I literally made him mutilate his dick. I already took away his other son and his nephew, who was like a son to him. Mm-hmm. And then Mastema is like, well, yeah, but... like, I feel like he really doesn't have the same rhetorical point that like Satan has in the book of Job. Because like Job had always been fortunate, but Abraham's kind of been through a lot.
He has, but he's also been promised the most of any person. He's had a personal and familial covenant with God himself. Like, God has picked his favored people. Before that, God didn't have a favored people.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Well, he sort of did in that he chose Noah, but he just chose the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or tried to.
Mm-hmm.
This time he's like, I'm making a promise with you and for all of your family for perpetuity.
Sure, sure.
So I could see, I mean, obviously Mastema is a little schemer and, like I said, a serious shit disturber.
So, but then the rest of it kind of goes down in the same way, brings him up the mountain, he's about to kill him. And then actually in this version, the angel narrating the story intervenes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, and then, you know, Abraham got out his knife and then I said, hey, or God told me to like step in. And I said, hey, and it's so Abraham doesn't kill Isaac. And it says Mastema is, quote, put to shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yet nothing. He never seems to get any consequences for his actions.
Mastema, no. Mastema is part of the natural order.
I hate Mastema.
There's always it's an element of chaos in
what
the system.
What is he?
Some men just want to see the world burn, as I learned from Christopher Nolan.
I feel like Mastema is like totally manipulating God. Like, he's a total chumpo.
But I think Mastema is there to be the worst instinct of God, you know?
The worst instinct of God.
To be like, if God wants to do good, Mastema has to be there to like trick him.
And you really don't think Mastema sounds like a Dragon Ball name?
Do I think that Mastema sounds like... No, it doesn't sound like a Dragon Ball name.
What does it sound like?
Mastema? I don't know what it sounds. It's a good name, though.
It means something in Hebrew, but I can't remember what. It means, like, hatred or, like, something like that.
Hedgehog.
Yeah. Like, echidna.
Mm-hmm. Some sort of spiny boy.
Yeah. It means spiny boy. So, well, time passes. Sarah dies.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the angels fucking test Abraham again.
Yep.
To see if he's like too upset about his wife dying. And he's not, so good for him. Isaac, their son, marries Rebecca. Abraham gets remarried to a woman named Keturah, and has a bunch more sons. Has like 9 more sons.
Yep.
This is mentioned in regular Genesis, but I didn't remember it.
It's very brief.
Yeah. And then why don't we take a break?
That sounds great.
And then we'll come back. We'll talk about Jacob and Esau and we'll see.
There's still so much good stuff. We are frankly fucking super excited to have any material at all.
I know.
To talk
I'm
about.
Like, so I'm like, oh my God, you can actually say things. Oh my God. There's not a bunch of bullshit about Babylon.
Anyway, we're going to keep doing that right after a short break. You're going to hear some music and we'll be right back with more Sunday School Dropouts.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we're talking about the Book of Jubilees.
Yeah.
Hey.
It's a party.
We're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we left off with the death of Sarah.
Yes.
And with Isaac marrying Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
And with Abraham getting remarried.
Right.
And so the next thing that's going to happen, if you know your Bibble lineage, mm-hmm. is that Jacob and Esau are born. And that is indeed what happens. We don't get quite the dramatic birth story with the red cord,
right.
and the sticking out,
right.
and whatever. But
it makes up for it on the back end.
I agree. Yeah, very much so. But it is the same basic deal that Jacob is like an indoor kid and he's Rebecca's favorite. And Esau is a hunter. He's the firstborn, mm-hmm. even though they're twins. Although I don't think it says they're twins here, does it?
They're not twins in this one.
They're not twins in this one. So Esau is the firstborn and he's like a hunter guy. And,
yeah, he rough like goat.
Yeah. And he's hairy and he's Isaac's favorite. And interestingly here, Abraham also has a favorite.
That's right.
I think Abraham, I guess, was already dead in Genesis when Jacob and Esau are born.
I just think he wasn't involved in the
story.
Or
it just doesn't mention him.
Because his blessing, isn't involved in it.
No.
No.
So, but in this one, he also has a favorite, and his favorite is Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
Because he sees that that's who is going to carry on his lineage. So then there's a couple chapters about, like, laws and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to skip over because they're boring. And then we're just going to fast forward to Abraham is very old. And he's on his deathbed. But he's hosting the festival of...
first fruits.
Yeah. Shavuot or the Feast of Weeks. Some harvest type festival.
Is that first fruit? Is that the same thing?
I think so.
Is that still celebrated? Why am I asking you?
I don't know. I don't know.
should we throw a first fruits party this year?
Maybe.
Sounds fun.
When are the first fruits? Is that spring or fall?
I think that's usually fall, I would expect.
Okay.
Well, no, maybe spring.
Because there's like a spring one and a fall one, I think.
Well, we'll find out, listeners, and you're all invited.
You're not invited. Our apartment is quite small. Anyway, they're doing their harvesty festival.
Mm-hmm.
And both Isaac and Ishmael are there. Because apparently after...
Awkward.
Well, apparently after Sarah died, he like reestablished contact with Ishmael, even though Ishmael was like banished and almost died in the desert.
Yeah.
And it talks about how Isaac and Ishmael like spending time together. They love each other. They love Abraham. And everybody's just really happy to see each other. And they're having a great time. Jacob is still young. Jacob is there and he's like doing... like some offering stuff. He's like taking care of some of the offerings or maybe like just helping with them. And everybody's like really impressed and happy with him. And Abraham is lying in bed and he gives Jacob this blessing. And Jacob climbs in bed with him,
mm-hmm.
and slept in the bosom of Abraham, his father's father. And he kissed him seven times and his affection and his heart rejoiced over him. And he falls asleep. And Abraham dies right there. And Jacob wakes up and his body is cold. And he's like, oh, no, he says, father, father. And then he goes and wakes up his mom, which is like so human.
Mm-hmm.
Or he goes like a young boy goes and he wakes up his mom. And so his mom is like, oh, no. And she wakes up Isaac. And then they go to Abraham's room. They see that he's dead and that. The commotion wakes up Ishmael, and he comes in and sees, and they're all crying together. And I was reading this, and it moved me to tears. I was crying. I was full on crying reading this, not just like tearing up, which I'm tearing up a little now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like full on crying, like blowing my nose, like tears running down my face. I have never... been moved to tears by the Bible before.
Wow.
I don't know. It was so human.
Mm-hmm.
It was And like, something about it was so modern, like the idea of like, oh, there's half brothers and there's remarriages, mm-hmm. and there's different generations.
And there's like a schism in one generation that's like healed by the next.
Yeah. And they all just like loved each other and loved being around each other. And just the like, the beauty of like, I'm tearing up of like a son, a grandson, just like falling asleep in his grandfather's arms. And they're both just so joyful to be in each other's presence. It was like really, really touching to me. It has nothing to do with God, which I think is why it was able to like hit me harder. But I thought it was so beautiful. I need to get a tissue.
That's fine.
Sorry, I'm just getting a little weepy about the Bible over here.
It's okay. It's happened before.
It has never happened before in my entire life. Okay, moving on. So then we kind of rejoin. We rejoin regular old Genesis again.
Mm-hmm.
With Jacob and Esau. We've got the... He gets him to sell him his birthright. He tricks Isaac into giving him his blessing.
Which is the opposite of that beautiful family moment that you were talking about earlier.
It totally is.
Because it's still super messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And why does he steal his birthright?
It's just... For what? I mean, it's just like trickery.
But Mastema was involved somehow.
Yeah, is Mastema involved?
I don't think he was mentioned in that part, but they've set up the pattern enough where
he has his dirty little fingers and everything, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, that spiny boy.
And then he, you know, Rebecca is worried that Esau will retaliate, mm-hmm. so she sends Jacob to go live with his uncle, and then he marries, you know, he wants to marry Rachel, but then his uncle tricks him into marrying Leah, and then he has to work 7 more years, marry Rachel, blah, blah, blah.
I read that it was illegal in an old rabbinic law to marry two sisters.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oops.
That's why he had to be tricked into it.
I see. And then he also marries their handmaids become his like concubines or whatever.
Right.
So he has children with all of them. He has 12 sons total and one daughter, although they're not all born yet at this point in the timeline. And then they move back to Canaan. And he has the dream about the ladder to heaven,
mm-hmm.
which is like the Jacob's ladder.
Right. Which I still don't like get the importance of at all.
I don't really get it either. But there's nothing about him wrestling with God.
That's right. I noticed that as well. So he gets his new name. God just gives him a new name.
Yeah.
And I think so wrestling with God is like a pun on Israel, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like what Israel means. Yeah.
I think in this text, they make a different pun with Israel. He becomes Israel and they say like, and that's because you've always been a great friend or something like that.
I thought there was no pun at all. I thought it was just like, and now it was like your descendants will be many and the name they will call you is Israel.
And maybe something like that. I thought there was a different pun, but yeah, there's no wrestling in this one.
No wrestling. Did you know that professional wrestling is not real?
I mean, it's real. It's really happening.
I can't believe this is really happening.
It's not a delusion in somebody's mind, unless we're all a delusion in God's mind.
And God seems pretty delusional based on this text. There's also the story. So when they get back,
I don't like you talking ill about God that way. You've never met him.
I'm just saying God's ill. He's ill and like a villain.
Don't say that ever.
So we get the story once they're back in Canaan of Dinah and Shechem.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dinah's the one, Jacob's one daughter. And in Genesis, she has sex with this guy, Shechem, the prince of a city that's also called Shechem. And it's not really clear if it's consensual or not, but they're going to get married. And then Jacob's sons Dinah's brothers are like, okay, yeah, like we can get married, but you'll have to get circumcised because that's our religion. And then when they're sitting there with their dicks all bleeding, then they go in and slaughter them all.
Mm-hmm.
So in this one, A, it's much more explicit that it's rape.
Yes.
It says that Dinah's only 12.
Yes.
And it's like, it doesn't say like, oh, he lay with her or whatever. It says like he defiled her. And also there's no circumcision trick or marriage plot.
Right.
They just, there's no dick tricking.
No.
They just go in and kill them all.
Yeah. And I read that apparently at the time, historically at the time that this book was probably written, everybody hated Shaham.
Oh, really?
For some reason.
Maybe they're going around like defiling 12-year-olds. I mean, who wouldn't hate them?
So in the political atmosphere, they couldn't like look soft to Shaham by like, Getting circumcised is kind of like converting before you die.
In this one, though, like in both versions, Jacob is like, why did you do this? Like,
right.
I was trying to like have a nice life here and not like start wars with my neighbors.
Well, you shouldn't have 12 sons then. Some of them are going to be idiots.
12 large sons. And then Reuben also has sex with Bilha, who's mm-hmm. one of the handmaids. So it's his father's wife, but not his mom.
Which would be fine. It would have been fine in the days of Adam, but no longer.
Right. So, I mean, I don't think it would have been fine then, because you can't go like up a generation, right? You have to stay within your generation for the incest. I think
know your role.
Yeah.
Speaking of wrestling, I think.
Why not? And in Genesis, it's like he lay with her.
Mm-hmm.
And you could kind of imagine, like, oh, if she's the handmaiden, she's a lot younger. Maybe it was consensual, you know, like, whatever.
I mean, you can imagine whatever you want.
I mean, I was just thinking about that big love.
Well, we don't have
show,
to think about what you're thinking about.
But in this one, it's like he raped her mm-hmm. while she was asleep. And she immediately goes to Jacob and she's like, your son raped me. And so then he gets, like, disowned. So I guess... just basically, this one is much more explicit about things being rape.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is a good step.
I mean, maybe it is.
They still don't get, like, judged for rape, really.
Yeah,
They get judged for, like, basically having sex with the wrong person.
They have the exact same consequences, whether it's specified that the sex is consensual or not. But I don't know. And then at this point, the timeline's a little confusing, right? So at this point, Joseph's brothers sell him into slavery. So Joseph is one of the 12 sons.
Yeah, just like in the musical of the same name.
Yeah, except that there's no coat. There's no Technicolor Dreamcoat in this version.
That's fine with me. I don't understand what the Technicolor Dreamcoat had to do with anything anyways.
Well, because it was Jacob gave it to him because he was his favorite. And so he gave him this special garment that nobody else got to have.
Mm.
And in this one, it doesn't say that he's his favorite. It's just like they dealt with him treacherously. Mm. And they were going to kill him, but then they decided to sell him instead. And they take his coat and they dip it in blood and to pretend like he got eaten by a wild animal. But it's not anything special. The coat isn't special. Joseph is off. We don't know where yet. He's gone. And some time has passed, an unspecified amount of time. The timeline is unclear. And Rebecca, Isaac's wife,
mm-hmm.
Jacob's mother.
Yes.
Feels that she's going to die soon.
Uh-huh.
And so she gets Isaac, Jacob, and Esau all together in a room. And she's like, I really don't want anybody to like take revenge on each other when I'm gone. And they all agree to it. And Esau is 100% on board.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, I sold him my birthright. That's my own fault.
Which squares with how it was in Genesis.
Yeah. Because in Genesis, when Jacob moved back to Canaan.
He was very afraid.
He was really nervous. But Esau was like, hey, it's fine. We're brothers. So in this one, everything's fine. No revenge is going to be taken. I do like that when she's telling Isaac about it beforehand, he's like, yeah, I know. Like, I used to love Esau more because he was the firstborn. But now I love Jacob more because, like, Esau kind of sucks.
Everybody's on that Jacob train, baby.
I know. That's because Esau, like, married Canaanite women instead of Israelite women.
That's
or
the problem. And
I mean, they're not Israelites yet because Jacob is his brother, but whatever.
Right. But Jacob went out of the way and he was like, hey, I heard from my grandpa that the right way to do this is to go find my cousins.
Yeah. Incest
and I've heard a lot about my hot cousin, Rebecca. So
Rachel.
Rachel. My bad. My bad.
Get us together.
Oops.
Can't go up a generation. Incest is solely one level of generation.
Just solely one level of generation.
So they agree they're not going to get revenge on anybody. And then Rebecca dies that night. And Isaac dies shortly after. And they all get buried in the Cave of the Patriarchs in Hebron.
Mm-hmm. And Cave of the Patriots.
It keeps it keeps referring to it as the Double Cave.
Mm-hmm.
Which I just like, it's just like, seems like a handy way to refer to it. You know, they're like, yeah, yeah, you know, the Double Cave.
It's like, okay, but two of them? It's or like you, one inside the other?
Yeah, you know, normally when you go in a cave, it's just like just one cave. So this one's like a double cave.
It's like two caves. But in one.
And even though Esau accepted all this, his sons didn't.
This is very like the rest of the Bible, though, because the main problem in the Bible is people having sons.
People's large sons.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking they're too large and in charge.
That's right.
So I guess, you know, because
boy's too big.
When the birthright and the blessing goes to Jacob, that presumably means that Esau's sons get a shittier inheritance.
Sure.
So they're mad about that. And they want him to go to war with Jacob, and he doesn't want to, but they kind of just, like, pester him into it.
Yeah.
And so they, like, march on Jacob, and he's like, what the fuck? I thought we worked this out. And Esau's like, yeah, you thought. And then Jacob's like, okay, well, if you're going to attack me, I'm going to fight back. And then, of course, he obviously wins and kills Esau. And
I like this. The scene is that Jacob is hesitant about shooting down Esau in the field of battle
because
it's his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And Judah, Jacob's son, speaks to Jacob and is like, basically, like, you have to do this. Judah spake to Jacob, his father, and said unto him, bend thy bow, father, and send forth thy arrows and cast down the adversary and slay the enemy. And mayest thou have the power, for we shall not slay thy brother, for he is such as thou, and he is like thee. Let us give him this honor. Then Jacob bent his bow and sent forth the arrow and struck Esau, his brother, on the breast and slew him. And so his kids are like, we can't kill your brother. Like, it's not right. Like, you owe
him. We can't kill Uncle Esau.
You owe him the honor of, like, killing him yourself. And I'm like, that's kind of fucked up, but it's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. And then, you know, so Esau is also called Edom because, well, it's probably like Adom is actually the, because that's Hebrew for red. And so, because he traded
so
his
the sons,
birthright.
The sons of Esau are the red boys.
Yeah, well, because he traded his birthright for a red,
the red
lentil men. Stew or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
and he also, in the Genesis version, came out with the red thing.
With the red cord, yeah. So he's also called Edom, and then the land is called, where he lives is called Edom. And so his descendants are the Edomites. And so then at the end of this whole thing, it's like, and that's why it's okay that we have Edomite slaves. It's all because Esau went back on his promise after Jacob totally fucking ripped him off.
Yeah.
Like
they got together amicably and there was a solution to the problem.
Yeah.
Where Jacob is just like, hey, you know, I stole the deathbed blessing and that was my bad. But
he doesn't really say that was his bad. He's just like, yeah.
No, but I'm saying I'm proposing a solution.
Okay.
Where he says he admits fault on that and then says, but I'll give you, you know, first share of the inheritance or whatever, like the oldest son's share of the inheritance. Like, he already stole the blessing. The blessing has like superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically stole his brother's superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
He should at least give him the money.
Yeah. But he doesn't.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, what do you need money for if you got superpowers? Yeah. God is always just going to give you more money.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
Meanwhile, like, in Egypt, Joseph has been sold into slavery. So this is like, yeah, so it's like jump back in time, but in Egypt. And it's very, very similar to Genesis. He's a servant to Potiphar. Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. He won't sleep with her, so she falsely accuses him of rape. He gets put in prison. He interprets some dreams correctly for people in prison and then interprets dreams for Pharaoh correctly and then gets put in a lot of power.
Nicely done. That was quick.
And then it says in this version that he stood before Pharaoh the same year Isaac died.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like getting into power just before Jacob and Esau have this war.
Right.
And it also says he's 30 that year. So he was sold when he was 17. So he he's been gone 13 years.
And he spent two of those in prison, according to this narrative.
Some other additional details we learn from Jubilees is that Pharaoh calls him Sophantifans.
A.K.A. Sir Fancy Pants.
It does have quite a ring to it. A little fancier sounding than Joseph. And also, it says that Pharaoh gives him Potiphar's daughter to marry.
Yeah.
The daughter of the woman that, like, falsely accused him of rape and sent him to jail. I mean, I guess it doesn't necessarily have to be her daughter. It could be her, like, stepdaughter.
Yeah.
But either way, it's fucked up.
It's how you do business back then, baby.
And then there's all the stuff with this. So the brothers come down. And blah,
this
blah,
is
blah.
All very similar.
Yeah. We don't need to go through that. If you don't know this story, go back and listen to our Genesis episode. Or
yeah, or read it your fucking self.
Read
how about that?
The Bible, how about?
No, you
or
don't
like,
have to. That's why we're doing it.
Read any like children's illustrated
that might be
story
fun.
Of the Bible or whatever.
Isn't there a Disney movie about Joseph?
No.
Okay. Well, never mind then.
So, long story short, he reunites with the brothers. They all reconcile. Mm-hmm. And they all come down to live in Egypt with him. And Jacob comes down too. And they're all very favored because Joseph is like Pharaoh's right-hand man.
And it's a great time of prosperity for the Jews. They get a lot of money. They get all the biggest flocks. They get lots of land.
Yeah. However, some time passes and Joseph dies. And then in Genesis, we pick back up with Moses. And it's like, now the Jews are slaves.
Right.
And this book kind of gives you a little explanation for how they went from being like really favored to being slaves.
I mean, if you had read more of the Bible, the explanation is very clear. Like, whenever they get prosperity, they get complacent and start worshiping local gods.
Well, yeah, that's always a safe assumption. Like, it's always a safe assumption that they're being punished because they worship idols. Mm-hmm. But this book also posits that the king of Canaan took over Egypt for a while, mm-hmm. and magically knew that the Israelites were going to want to go back to their homeland in Canaan. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to prevent that from happening. And so he made them slaves.
Unlikely.
As opposed to the rest of all this. You found the one unrealistic part.
Yeah, I'd like you to cool it on the attitude.
My toot is all I have, babe. I am my toot.
Yeah, you're just one crude dude with a lot of toot.
That's me. So we fast forward to Moses. And remember, this whole book is supposedly...
Don't tell me what to remember.
Supposedly, this whole book is being dictated to Moses by angels.
Right, the angel of the presence.
Yeah, so now the narration starts being like... And then you were born, and your father did this, and your mother did this. It's all very similar to Genesis. Moses and the bulrushes, mm-hmm. Pharaoh's daughter, mm-hmm. grows up, kills an Egyptian slave driver, flees to Midian. Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Midian part's weird, though.
The Midian part is weird, because in Genesis, he gets married to a Midianite woman. He has some kids. And when he is on his way back to Egypt, God randomly decides to kill him, mm-hmm. but his wife saves his life by performing an emergency circumcision on their infant son.
Yeah.
In this version, he's on his way back to Egypt for no particular reason. There's no wife.
No, he's on the way back because he's called back by God.
There's no wife. There's no kid.
Right.
And it's fucking Mastema.
Yeah, it's that
who
spiny,
tries to kill him.
The spiny boy himself.
I hate this spiny boy. And then, like... What saves him is not an emergency circumcision. It's the angel narrating the story.
That's right.
So the angel narrating the story is like, yeah, Mastema tried to kill you, but I stepped in. We all remember that. Mm-hmm. And.
Is the angel his wife?
Whoa. Whoa.
My wife, the angel.
I don't think an angel can be a Midianite, though.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, we've all met some Midianites. You know what I'm talking about. apologies to all the Midianites.
Yeah, apologies to all our Midianite listeners. So then we get a really super condensed version
I love it.
Of the story of, like, let my people go.
Yeah, it's great.
The plagues get one sentence, all of them.
So good.
And the parting of the Red Sea gets like two sentences. And then like after the fact, it's like, oh, yeah. And like, OK, so you went across the Red Sea and then we drowned all the Egyptians. And oh, yeah. You know, like all those times Pharaoh changed his mind. That was because of Mastema.
Right.
And then like the angel says that at some point Mastema was, this is the direct quote, was bound and imprisoned behind the children of Israel that he might not accuse them. And accuse, that's like,
yep,
Satan is the accuser, the accusing angel. But then it says they let Mastema go so that he could change Pharaoh's mind.
Let Mastema go.
So it is like God, like changing Pharaoh's mind. He just does it through a third party.
Right. Which is not the first or only time God acts through third parties.
No, but it's weird that in Genesis, it's like, yeah, he makes Pharaoh change his mind.
Yeah.
And then in Jubilees, it's like he ties up this weird supernatural angel demon guy. But then he's like, I'll let him change Pharaoh's mind. And then he lets him go to change Pharaoh's mind.
Yeah.
So it just seems like adding an extra step. I think he needs to just like reorganize his fucking like office, like hierarchy chart. Like,
what do you want? I mean, but he can't have like be like hands on making chaos in the world. That's not his brand.
Why not just wait in Genesis?
No, but people can't see their boss like out there making chaos. Though they won't respect him when he creates order.
I think they respected him just as much. Well, maybe they didn't because they did make that golden calf. But that wasn't Moses.
That was his shitty brother Aaron.
Yeah, that was Aaron.
And that was the guy they chose to be the head priest?
Yeah.
Come on.
Anyway, they go through that whole story. It's like three paragraphs. Yeah, like the whole...
Love it.
The whole thing. And then the angel suddenly seems to remember Passover, like after the fact. And he's like, oh, yeah. Also, that Passover thing you guys just did. Super important. Keep doing that every year. And then the last chapter is like some detailed instructions about keeping the Sabbath holy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it says like this many Jubilees have passed. And then this many year weeks and this many years. And you have 40 more years in the desert, so look forward to that. And I don't think we ever get the Ten Commandments. We got a lot of laws interspersed throughout, but there's never Ten Commandments. I mean, like, keep the Sabbath holy is one of the commandments, mm-hmm. So we got, like, that one, like, times four in the last chapter. But that's it.
Yeah, I mean... There were some instructions. There was one early on not to kill. And then I was like, but I know this how this story goes. And that person is going to kill like a whole bunch of people.
People so, always kill people.
Yeah, I don't really understand. People who kill people. Anyway, but that's the end of the book.
That's Jubilees.
We got to rate it.
How would you rate this book?
I'll give it 49 out of 55 first fruits.
First fruits.
55 first fruits.
And why?
You know what? It was pretty great. I think it was great. There are a ton of great stories in here. Just like in, how do we call it? The other Genesis? In Genesis. This is in Genesis.
This is Jubilees.
You're right. This is Jubilees. Overall, I like the choices. I like some of the edits that they made. I like the crazy angel stuff. I really enjoy that. I feel like it fills in some gaps. It doesn't really square with the rest of the theology presented in the canonical Bible, but that's fine with me because I don't care. I'm really just reading it for entertainment and to make a podcast. So I guess the language is not as poetic maybe in some cases as in some parts of Genesis, but maybe I'm just not remembering Genesis as well because some of this seemed pretty plain, but that might have more to do with the style of translation. I think stuff that is super canonical and has been for a long time is probably treated much more reverently in the translation than something that is treated mostly as an academic text.
Hmm.
That's just an assumption, though. I don't know for sure. But I really enjoyed it because these are good stories, and I already knew them for the most part, so I didn't have to struggle as hard with the details.
Yeah, I do feel like it works really well as like if you already know these stories mm-hmm. and then you read this on top of them, it's like giving you extra details and like backstory. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it works really well.
It's like a Silmarillion kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, what'd you think?
I'm just going to go ahead and give it 70 out of 70 Raven yellings at.
Nice.
Because it made me cry.
Yeah.
It moved me to tears.
Yeah.
Whatever else its flaws are, I can't say that about any other book of the Bible.
That's amazing. Wow, that's our highest rating ever.
Yeah.
Go out and pick up a copy. Everybody,
you can find it
at your local bookstore
on like conspiracytheory.net.
Yes, sure.
Hidden secrets mm-hmm. of the gods.
Yeah.
Biz.
The third eye books. US. But now that the unimportant work is done,
yeah,
we can get on to the thing that matters to people, that yeah. actually matters to
this
people.
This is a cat cursing podcast. Mm-hmm. That's its primary function.
Masquerading as not a Bible study podcast.
Yeah. So we have a first for the show. We received an animal that is not a dog or a cat.
It was a photo. The animal was not mailed to
us. Oh, yeah. It's just a photo of Bailiwick the leopard gecko. Our listener Lisa, says that he's a good boy. She says, please bless him because he's a desert animal living in Pennsylvania in December, and that's not right.
That isn't right.
I owned leopard geckos when I was a child. Mm-hmm. I had to feed them crickets. So we had to keep a terrarium of crickets in the bathroom with they ate like orange slices. So the orange slices were like always rotting, mm-hmm. and the crickets smelled terrible, and they would always escape. And then we also had to cover the crickets in vitamin powder before we fed them to the geckos. So we had to gather all these crickets into a plastic bag full of vitamin powder and shake them up until they were ghostly white and then dump them in the gecko terrarium. And then the gecko would chase them. We had two geckos. Mine was named Nefertiti and my sister's was named Sydney. I am glad to meet Bailiwick. And I will bless him.
If you bless him, it's over my objections because he is a leopard gecko. So he's more cat, kind of a, more like cat-like than dog-like.
But he's smiling like a dog. okay, right. Let me.
Objection overruled.
What I say to Bailiwick is, thou shalt be joined to the Lord and be the companion of all the sons of Jacob. Let his table be thine, and do thou and thy sons eat thereof. And may thy table be full unto all generations, and thy food fail not unto all the ages.
And by food, of course, you mean powder-covered crickets.
Powdered crickets.
Yummy! Hey, Bailiwick, great job. You're a good boy.
We also got Bridget sent us a cat named Euterpe. I believe that's a Greek muse who needs a curse because she keeps trying to kill my plants. Well, Bridget's plants, not our plants. Jessica wrote in, she has three cats, an older cat named Koshka, Russian for cat, and twin boys I named Hugin and Munin after the ravens who help Odin gather intel around the world. Those are
lots of ravens on this show tonight.
It's appropriate for this episode. Curse them because the F word can only do so much at 3 a.m.
Jared wrote in with a cat that desperately needs cursing.
As so many cats do.
Whose name is Oreo, a barn cat that his wife and daughter procured from a family friend, brought home to catch rodents, and to provide his daughter with a cat that she and her friend could dress up in a pretty dress and call Queen Oreo. When we took her to get spayed, the vet informed him that she was actually a he and neutered him instead. Can you believe that? What a rude vet.
I love Princess Oreo.
He's quite sure that the God of the Old Testament would find this gender-swapping feline to be an abomination before the Lord. Also, Jared has never seen him or her catch a mouse. Please curse accordingly.
And so, some barn cat.
In addition, Kyle wrote that he has a cat here. I assume he means there.
And she's not in our apartment right now.
She desperately needs to be cursed. Her name is Hecate. Three symbols, not the Shakespearean way, so I hope that is right. And she is not getting into the holiday.
Hecate.
Oh, like a crisp Hecate?
Yeah. Mm. Crack open a crisp Hecate.
A handsome red can. Lime on mine, please. She is not getting into the holiday spirit, damn it.
What?
In this picture attached, she's very cute, she refused to wear her Santa hat. I presume she did that through her management representation. And just pouted instead. Also, she's knocked over the Christmas tree twice now and tried to open several of our gifts before Christmas morning. She's completely black as well, which probably means she's a witch in disguise. I don't really like that. It's like a slam on witches.
Also, she's very beautiful.
A handsome cat. But we will curse that cat.
Yeah, she is evil and needs to be cursed.
And so to all the cats above and any other cats out there listening in Radio Land, I say, if the boar can change its skin and make its bristles as soft as wool, or if it can cause horns to sprout forth on its head like the horns of a stag or of a sheep, then I will observe the tie of brotherhood with thee. And if the breasts separated themselves from their mother, for thou hast not been a brother to me, and if the wolves make peace with the lambs so as not to devour or do them violence, and if their hearts are towards them for good, then there shall be peace in my heart towards thee. Those are unlikely things.
Yeah.
No peace in the heart.
That was from Esau to Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Very harsh.
And then we have one special cat we got a curse from our previous guest, Grant, a.k.a. Ironicus. He says, please curse my mother-in-law's cat. The only recourse I have for the holidays is passive aggression. And this cat is a little orange bag of donuts, as my friend Rachel Hadaway would say. and I have a special curse from the Book of Jubilees that is very appropriate for cats. And it says, you make our name a curse and your whole life a hissing.
Oh, nice.
So there you have it. Little orange cat. You're super cute and I cursed you really hard.
Will that cat ever recover? Find out next week on Sunday School Dropouts. Of course, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at SunSchoolDrop.
You can follow me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill.
You can find us on Facebook by looking for Sunday School Dropouts.
And we thank Elise Carlton for our logo, and we thank Nico for music, sound editing, and sound engineering.
You're welcome, baby. You can follow... Did you just already say where you can follow our ULM?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, cool. If you want to help other people find the show, a really nice thing to do is to leave us a review on iTunes. We won't belabor the point, but it's a good thing to do.
However, if we get to 100 views, Nico will join Twitter. And I recently found out that as Americans, we only see the American reviews. And we have reviews in other countries. And that means our total number of reviews is at least at 46. So we're almost halfway there. If you want to cyberbully Nico, you got to give us a review.
Yes. And everyone, I'm sure, does. This has been another episode of Sunday School Dropouts. My name is Nico Bakulich.
I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And we will see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.